40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
They're playing back.
This evening, we focus on the Final Four in the U.S. Men's College Basketball Championship Tournament, one of the most popular sporting events here in the United States. In the first semifinal Saturday evening, Villanova will play Oklahoma in Houston, Texas, and that will be followed by a game in Houston between North Carolina and Syracuse. The Sooners of Oklahoma have been led by Buddy Hield, a sharp-shooting guard from the Bahamas. I asked basketball analyst Len Elmore if Hield is the best collegiate shooter since Stephen Curry.
Well, I mean, he's the best that's on display. I know that there are excellent shooters throughout the country, but the one that's on display, yeah, I never really want to get into those types of comparisons simply because we go so overboard in certain periods where people want to own the moment. And by owning the moment, they want to witness the absolute best. Those two guys certainly are two of the best shooters, not only over the last decade, if you will, but maybe two of the best shooters that we might see in college basketball. You know, you can't make comparisons, particularly in different eras, although Curry and Hield are pretty much in the same era within a decade. I like to say that when you take a look at Hield, he's got a complete game. For the most part, not only can he put it on the floor and go to the basket, he rebounds well, he's a surprisingly good defender. And, you know, he's got the confidence to pull up and take shots 4 and 5 feet from beyond the arc. From an accuracy standpoint, as I said, there are times when he doesn't shoot the ball as well. I know against Villanova, he didn't shoot the ball nearly as well. He, at one point, against Villanova's man-to-man, he was 0 for 10, including 0 for 5 from beyond the arc. So, it depends on how you guard him. He's not invincible, but he certainly is a pretty darn good shooter.
Len, on a personal note, can you reminisce a little bit about your own experience in the NCAA championship tournament? If I got my facts right, I think the Terrapins made it to the Elite Eight back in 73. Was that one of the highlights of your collegiate career?
Well, certainly. I mean, and unfortunately, it was a situation where back in those days, the Atlantic Coast Conference, as were all conferences, just one bid conferences. And, you know, we were able to get there primarily because NC State was on probation. We played them in the championship of the ACC tournament, but I had to sit out because I had a broken foot, even though I played in the semifinal game, which clinched our visit to the tournament, because of NC State's sanctions. And we lost to them in the ACC tournament by 1 point, but nevertheless went to the tournament, won our games, got to the Elite Eight, a really tough game against Providence with Marvin Barnes, Ernie B. Gregorio. It was nip and tuck, I think 51-50 at the half, but in the second half I fouled out trying to play tough defense. Ernie B. Gregorio fouled out, and I think that by that time Providence was probably a little more mature. Certainly had a better all-around game than we did. We had two freshman guards playing in John Lucas and Mo Howard, who went on to be outstanding as time went on. It was a tough loss for us to feel, and unfortunately it was the only time we got to the NCAA tournament, because the following year, playing for Maryland, we were number two in the country, and guess who we played in the ACC tournament for the right to go to the NCAA tournament, and that was NC State, who was number one in the country at that time. We lost to them 103-100 in overtime in a game that many people reminisce and say might have been one of the best played games ever, simply because of the lack of unforced turnovers, the flow. We had no three-point shots We had no clock, 30-second clock, yet, and the defense was pretty good, yet the score was 103-100 because of superior basketball. It was a heartbreaker to be number two in the country and not to be able to go to the NCAA tournament, but nevertheless, those were the rules of the day, and certainly the year after, they changed the rules, expanded the field, but that did my class no good. So, you know, I have a kind of a bittersweet memory, but I've certainly enjoyed the tournament when other teams have played.
As you mentioned, Len, the tournament was smaller when you played for Maryland. Was the quality of basketball perhaps a little better because, you know, the field wasn't as large?
Well, not only was it better because of the shrunken field, because the cream essentially rose to the top, but also because in our day we had juniors and seniors playing on everyone's team. I believe in that game that I mentioned, it was NC State prior to the NCAA tournament. In that game, we had seven NBA draft picks on the floor at one time, and that's pretty much unheard of today. And during a game in against Providence, my junior year, 1973, in the NCAA tournament, I'd say we still had one, two, three, four, five, six. We had about six ultimate NBA players on the floor at that time. So, yeah, I would say that the condensation, if you will, a condensed talent level made for much better basketball.
And you've done a lot off the court, Len, and I look at some of the players on that team. You know, Tom McMillan became a U.S. congressman, and John Lucas. You guys have done a lot off the basketball court. I mean, how much credit do you give College Park and its academic program for the man you are today?
I give it a great deal of credit, not just the academic program, but the sports program. As I said, you know, colleges and universities should be in the business of leadership development, and I think that all of us took full responsibility for our educations. Certainly, we learned a lot. We matured as people, as well as gained, you know, academic knowledge and understanding. You know, I became a lawyer, graduated from Harvard Law School after my playing days, and I was a prosecutor and was in private practice for a long time. That's why I continue to say that if we can improve and reform the system, which kind of went out of control after the Supreme Court stripped the NCAA of its power to regulate certain things, including, you know, football, I believe that we can get it back to the point where there's a balance of equities, where student athletes can focus on their education, recognize the value of that education without being handed dollars and turning into employees. And we want to be able to maintain a benefactor-beneficiary relationship, because the pro-social qualities of benefactor-beneficiary is that when the beneficiaries are successful, that leaves benefactors to give more. And beneficiaries, if they're successful, they learn the importance of giving back themselves, so it creates more benefactors. And that's really what this is all about.
Finally, Len, you mentioned the broken foot and those kind of bittersweet memories of more than 40 years ago. What's the best memory you had as a Maryland Terrapin?
Well, I mean, obviously the recognition as, you know, one of the top players in school history, and we've had an awful lot of them, to see my number hanging from the rafters in Xfinity Center. But if you're talking about specific experiences, I think the first two games in that ACC tournament, when we beat Duke and North Carolina by about 25 apiece, those are some of the worst beatings that they ever had in the tournament. I think that's pretty satisfying.
Len Elmore, basketball analyst, All-American at Maryland. Great to talk with you, Len, and have a great trip to Houston.
All right, Sonny, thank you.
Meanwhile, Syracuse is the only school this year with teams in both the men's Final Four and the women's Final Four. Jesse Dougherty covers Syracuse men's basketball for The Orange, the university's student newspaper. VOA's Rick Narcisse asked him about the atmosphere on campus with both the men's and women's teams in the Final Four.
It is really cool that both teams are in the Final Four. I would like to tell you that there is some crazy buzz on campus right now. If there is, I haven't really seen it. I think people are excited. That I'm sure the bookstore's doing good sales on their shirts. There was a pep rally the other day. It doesn't really feel like it's that crazy different. You have to consider Syracuse is a school that is a basketball school to begin with. So If this were like smaller school, an actual school that would be a normal 10 seat, you maybe would expect a big spike of excitement and all these banners and all these things. But like generally Syracuse is basketball oriented. So any like billboards or any signs outside stores, like probably have been there for a while. So I haven't seen many things that are out of the ordinary for two teams making the Final Four that you maybe would expect, just because the city in general is a basketball town and pretty much all year waits for basketball season. I mean, football season is pretty much just waiting for basketball season. The summer is pretty much waiting for basketball season. So right now there's not some like crazy buzz on campus about this. People are excited, but it's not too different from what it normally is in terms of just people generally being excited about basketball to begin with.
Focusing on the men's team, with the way last season ended and how this season began with the 9-game suspension of the head coach, how surprising is their run to you?
It's like all-time surprising. They've defied a lot of big odds to get to this point. I mean, like you mentioned, losing Jim Boeheim for 9 games set them back, and then they start 0-4 in conference play. And a few of the guys at the Daily Orange actually dug up a stat this week that Syracuse is the first ever Final Four team to start 0-4 in conference play. So if you start with that, you already have the fact that this is such an unlikely run that has never happened before. And then you just start layering things on. The fact that Michigan State lost and it kind of opened up Syracuse's path to Chicago. And then beating Virginia when you're down 15 with like 9 minutes left. I mean, there's been so many crazy things.
I think the whole country's in shock right now.
The whole country seems pretty mad, too, about it. No one's too happy about Syracuse being in the Final Four.
Understandable, but I'm sure Syracuse Nation is not worried about the rest of the country.
Certainly not Jim Boeheim, and probably certainly not his players either.
Playing the last number one seed of the tournament, North Carolina, what do you think the Orange have to do to get this one?
I think UNC could be considered the best team in the country just because of the size they bring, and they're very good defensively, and they have smart guards. But the fact of the matter is they don't shoot that well. So I think Syracuse has to really pack the paint against UNC. I mean, just make them make shots early, because, you know, there is a possibility that they don't ever really get hot from three. I don't think you can commit to defending the paint and then get out of it after one or two threes. You got to make them hit, you know, 5, 6, maybe even 7 to then extend your zone, because like this is a team that's very streaky from the perimeter. And if you make them play that game instead of just carving up inside, because they're not streaky around the rim. When they're on the rim, they're going to score. So you have to make them beat you from the perimeter, and you can't be scared to stay in that kind of defensive mindset. Even if UNC does mount, you know, small runs, a few shots here and there, you can't see it as a reason to just jump out and then extend your 2-3 zone and go crazy. I mean, you have to just roll with the punches and stay the course. And like I really do believe that. And then the other end, Syracuse has to just take care of the ball. The only teams that beat UNC this year have had fewer than 10 turnovers aside from one team. So in 5 of UNC's 6 losses, the teams have had fewer than 10 turnovers. And I think that's a big number, because UNC is just so good in the transition offense. And they're just so good that way. And they run so well, and they're so organized in their fast break and their secondary break, that it's so hard to stop them with those bigs running the floor and the way they run the floor. And if you let them get out in transition, that's like 3 points. So you really can't let them do that, because they're going to get on runs and then they're going to bury you in transition, because their half-court offense isn't that great. So transition is where they really thrive. And if you take care of the ball, you can keep them from doing that.
You wrote a piece about Malachi Richardson and how tough he is to guard. Can you talk a little bit about him and why he's so hard to guard?
Malachi is tough to guard because he's in between positions. He kind of has the build of a small forward in terms of like his strength, but he has kind of a guard first step quickness. So if you put a small forward stretch guy on him, you're probably going to get burned, or he's probably going to be able to get into the paint. And if you put a guard on him, Malachi's pretty good at still getting kind of a step or two on that guy. And it's going to be really hard to defend him going to the rim. And that's why he draws a lot of fouls, because guys have to foul him, because he's very, very strong. So when you get his weight, I mean, he's not heavy, but I'd say he's on the huskier side of a guard. When you get his weight going to the rim like he does, he's extremely difficult to guard. And then he's very good pulling up off the dribble, catch and shoot threes. He has a hesitation to his game. He can catch the ball, wait a few beats, and then shoot, where a lot of guys who are catch and shoot shooters have to shoot right away. He doesn't need to do that. He can catch the ball and wait and let the play develop and see how guys are going to play him. And then he's great at reading the defense in that way. So he can see where that guy's playing him. He can decide if he has space to shoot. He can decide if he's going to go around him. He's a very good passer. He makes some mistakes turnover-wise, but he sees the floor extremely well.
That's Jesse Dougherty, who covers Syracuse men's basketball for The Orange, the university student newspaper. And Jesse was talking with VOA's Rick Narcisse by telephone from Syracuse, New York. Joining us now in the studio is Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department. Dan, welcome back to the sunny side of sports.
Hi, Sonny. Thanks for having me. This is an exciting weekend.
Big, very big, exciting weekend. And let's begin our little chat, Dan, with a Final Four quiz. Which of the Final Four men's teams has never won a national title?
Well, let's take a look. We have Syracuse, Oklahoma, North Carolina, and Villanova. We know that Villanova beat our local big-time basketball team back in the 80s in an
Georgetown
upset.
That's right.
Syracuse won about 10 years ago when Carmelo Anthony was their star player. And we know that North Carolina has a storied tradition of NCAA championships. So by process of elimination, I'll go with Oklahoma.
You are correct. You are correct, Dan. Now, we have begun a new month of April, Dan. Why is this tournament called March Madness?
Well, I go into some detail about that on the VOA Learning English website. I have a story about what is March Madness. So we go back and we look at the tournament that we're currently in for men's and women's basketball started back on March 17th. And that was the conclusion of a couple of weeks of championship tournament games with teams in the individual leagues. Leagues like the Big Ten and the ACC played games against each other to find a champion, and those champions went forward into this big tournament that goes for about 3 weeks and trickles into the beginning of April, even though it's called March Madness.
Now, this tournament, Dan, usually filled with some surprising results. In your opinion, what have been some of the surprising games so far in the competition?
Well, the one that was exciting for me was just to see how Yale University's basketball team would do in the tournament for the first time in over 50 years. Yale is known for producing some of the brightest minds in the history of the United States. It's in the same sports conference, which is called the Ivy League, with Harvard and Princeton and Dartmouth and Brown and the University of Pennsylvania, some of these storied academic institutions. Yale made the tournament, and they actually won a game against Baylor University, which was one of the larger schools in Texas that has had a good basketball team in recent years. Usually when these Ivy League teams make the tournament, they get knocked out in the first round.
That's right.
So that was exciting game number one. Then I think the most exciting finish to a game was during that same week when the University of Northern Iowa beat another team from Texas, the University of Texas, on a last-second shot. I think 1.4 seconds were on the clock when Paul Jesperson shot the ball from half court to win the game.
Incredible shot. I know that went viral on social media when he made that. Looking ahead to the Final Four, Dan, in particular the coaches, Syracuse has perhaps the most tenured head coach in college basketball. What can you tell our Voice of America listeners about Syracuse's head coach?
Well, I first have to, in interest of full disclosure, say that I have a degree from Syracuse University.
Oh, okay.
I've been proudly wearing my Syracuse jacket this week and hoping that Jim Boeheim and the Orange can make it to another championship game. Jim Boeheim is in his 40th season as the Syracuse coach, and he's actually going to retire after two more seasons, so this could be his last chance to win a championship. I mean, the Syracuse team, many people thought they weren't even going to get into the tournament, let alone make it to the Final Four. So even though Syracuse has this history of being one of the consistent good teams in college basketball, I think a lot of people are seeing them as kind of an underdog team since they had to win some big games to get to this point.
Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department. Dan, stay with us as we bring in Andrew Palcheski, the voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny, and happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Andrew. And what is trending in the sports world on this Friday?
Well, I got to start out with a shameless plug for my George Washington University Colonials 2016 NIT champions. This is the tournament that's kind of the second tournament after the NCAA men's basketball tournament. You have the 68 teams in those that field, and the teams that don't make it to that they call the big dance, they get to go to the NIT, and there's also the CBI is another one. So they won the NIT. It's the first ever championship in school history, a national championship in the school history for men's basketball. And the interesting thing about GW is that they have a big international contingent. They have three players that have been stars this year. Yuta Watanabe is from Japan. Patricio Guarino is from Argentina. He'll actually be playing on the Argentine men's basketball team in the Olympics in Rio. And Kevin Larson is from Copenhagen, Denmark. So those three players. And in fact, they were saying last night during the game that they taught people during the home games at here in Washington, D.C. to say, you know, let's go George Washington in the different languages. So there was a very much an international flair. But GW, of course, known too for two big international players, Yinka Dare, the Nigerian basketball player who unfortunately died very young, age 31, of a heart attack about a decade ago. And then Pops Mensabonsu from the United Kingdom, but he's of Ghanaian descent, another big basketball name. So GW is known for a lot of foreign basketball talent, and it showed off this year, and they won, and I congratulate them.
And I'll also congratulate Mike Lonergan, the head coach of GW. Personal note, my oldest son attended Coach Lonergan's basketball camp about 10 years ago when he was the head coach of Catholic University, another school based here in Washington.
And actually, Lonergan took Catholic University to the Division III men's basketball title. There are several different divisions, Division I, which is the NCAA tournament that we're talking about, and then Divisions II and III, so kind of the subdivisions. He took Catholic University to that championship a number of years ago.
And Andrew, I think you mentioned Yinka Dare. I know he had a cup of coffee or two in the NBA. Some of these players, these foreign players, do go on to the professional level.
Yeah, either the NBA or they play overseas as well.
What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, as we're talking about March Madness, the road to the Final Four heading to Houston. Everyone is very excited about that. The Syracuse Orange, I saw a photo on Twitter of the buses in the city of Syracuse say, "Let's go Orange" on the front of them. So they've changed all their, you know, the headers on the front of the buses to praise the team. And we're seeing a lot of that excitement from the different, you know, from Oklahoma, from North Carolina, from Syracuse, from all over the place, and Villanova as well. But this messaging app Blend, they did a little deep dive into some data about the NCAA tournament and what people were using on this messaging app. They looked at hundreds of thousands of different messages to determine what the kind of the top moments were. So the top three games mentioned, they said number one was Michigan State's loss in the first round. Of course, that was a huge upset, the biggest of the tournament, arguably. And then Kentucky and Oregon in the Sweet 16, Northern Iowa and Texas coming in at number three with that last second shot.
Incredible shot.
Yes, that arguably the shot of the tournament, as many people are saying. Of course, Buddy Hield is the most talked about player based on their data with this messaging. And the team that has been talked about the most and hated the most is Duke. Duke, as you know, is a team that inspires a lot of strong feelings, whether very positive or very negative. In this case, a little bit of both in this messaging app.
Dan Friedel mentioned Jim Boeheim, the very long-tenured head coach of Syracuse. Duke also has a head coach who's been there a very long time.
Yeah.
Mike Krzyzewski, I think 36 years as the head coach of the Blue Devils. Well, let's put you guys on the spot with the Final Four coming up. Who do you like to lift the trophy on Monday night, Andrew?
Even though I'm a Jayhawks fan, I would like to see Oklahoma. I think anytime the team from the Big 12 does well, I think that's a good thing. Oklahoma, I didn't realize this, had never won a national championship.
That's
so
right.
I think that would be great for them to win their first. And with Buddy Hield, such an amazing player, I think that would be really momentous for them. So I'd like to see Oklahoma win. Honestly, I think any of these teams could arguably win. It would be amazing if Syracuse did. They'd be the lowest seed to win. But they played exceptionally well. The same with Villanova. Even though they beat Kansas, they played quite well. So we'll see.
Dan, you want to give us a quick pick as I close out?
I'll go with North Carolina. They've been the strongest team, I think, of these four all season long. So I'll give them the nod in the championship game.
Okay, and I'll go with Villanova. What the heck? Villanova. And no fooling. That wraps up the April 1st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During the 31st regular session of the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva, United States delegates raised concerns regarding human rights in Syria, Iran, Burundi, South Sudan, North Korea, and China. They also highlighted abuses in several other countries. The delegates congratulated the government of Burma for taking key steps in the direction of democracy, but noted concern about continued military influence over the parliament and key ministries, abuses and discrimination against ethnic and religious minorities, and continued legal restrictions on freedoms of speech, assembly, and association. The United States led a joint statement on freedom of expression and peaceful transitions within democracies. 66 countries supported the statement, welcoming actions taken by states undergoing transitions to protect freedom of expression. The United States also supported important resolutions on the need for the protection of human rights defenders and the freedom to peacefully protest. The Council defeated an unprecedented number of hostile amendments, 31, which aimed to weaken the resolution on human rights defenders. U.S. Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Theodore Allegra, highlighted abuses in Latin America. The Venezuelan government uses detentions to suppress and punish government critics, including the political opposition, civil society, and independent media, he said. We call for the release of political prisoners and justice for those tortured and mistreated in detention. He also called on Cuba to end the practice of arbitrary short-term detention, respect freedoms of expression and assembly, and release all political prisoners. Regarding Russia, Mr. Allegra said the U.S. remains concerned about the occupation of Crimea and Russia's actions in eastern Ukraine. Domestically, the Russian government increasingly restricts freedom of expression while creating a climate of impunity for harassment and attacks against activists, journalists, and the political opposition. The promotion of human rights remains a pillar of U.S. foreign policy. The fight for greater freedom, greater respect, greater dignity is a unifying narrative of our humanity in all its diversity, Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken said recently. That is why we are very proud to join this council in upholding our common responsibility to this universal pursuit. The United Nations Human Rights Council celebrated its 10th anniversary this month. The United States' commitment to the mandate and mission of the Council runs deep into our nation's history, Deputy Secretary of State Blinken said in an address to the high-level segment. It is engraved into our nation's founding values and etched into the standards we strive to hold ourselves to every day.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, yeah, yeah. This one, yeah, yeah. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.